morning on 2FM. 2FM.
Now, posthumous albums, that's what I want to talk about. Hard not to escape the money-making machine of the music industry. Even in death, this machine, it does not rest. Well, this November sees the release of a new album by Leonard Cohen called Thanks for the Dance. And with this in mind, Kate Brennan-Harding is here to take a look at some of the better-known albums released posthumously and perhaps some of the albums that should never have seen the light of day at all. So, Kate, welcome to the programme. What's first?
Well, I picked Eva Cassidy, Songbird, because it's kind of a really unusual story in that nobody knew who she was before the album was released. And in fact, the album had been out 3 years before it became huge.
You mean, are you saying death made her famous?
Pretty much, yeah. Well, like, there was people who knew what she was about. She was a very, very quiet person and she was really shy. She was notorious for kind of having to get people to go out and talk her out of her car to come in and record something. So her friends and she had a manager, but she never got signed to any record labels or anything like that. Her manager, before she died, she knew she was dying. She was terminally ill. And she basically wanted to record some songs. So Songbird came about by putting the two kind of older recordings and then those newer recordings before she died together. Still, nothing really happened from it. And then what made it kind of giant was Terry Wogan played it in BBC. And that's literally people started to jump on it. And then it became Wedding Songs. And then it was number one for, I think, 8 or 9 weeks in 2001 in Ireland. Like, huge. So that's a massive, massive posthumous album.
Weirdly, like, never got to see any of the success at all, obviously.
Yeah. None of it, do you know? Okay, and maybe she wouldn't have been able for it.
Yeah, I'll give you a blast. Eva Cassidy, Fields of Gold. And there it is, the Sting thing, Fields of Gold. We're talking Eva Cassidy. Songbird is that album from 2001. And she's an awful lot of money raised for cancer research, etc.
An awful lot of money, yeah. And then everybody's kind of first dance. There's an awful lot of first dances at weddings too.
Okay, so this is what we're looking at here. We're looking at, if you like, posthumous albums, good, bad or indifferent in terms of should they or shouldn't they. Let's go to Amy Winehouse. What do you think? Was Lioness any good? I never heard it.
I really, really didn't like it. I mean, there's some stuff on it that's nice, but they could be just released as B-sides or released maybe a few years after her death. This was released 5 months after she died and it was cobbled together from, there was stuff from Back to Black on it.
So it was cobbled together. It wasn't an album she had finished.
No. And it was, there was only two new songs on it. There's a song featuring Nas, which I really like and loads of people kind of don't. He was a little bit kind of, he didn't really want to do it because she died and he was putting his vocals on afterwards, but she idolized him, so it was kind of nice sort of in memory tribute of that. But yeah, Lioness for me is just, it's the epitome of creating a posthumous album for the sake of it, for jumping on the money man, you know, the money people basically. And I wouldn't be a fan of it, but it did quite well in the charts. It did number one when it was released, because obviously she's only dead 5 months.
And when you're saying, well, there's songs from the previous album on this.
There was two songs from the previous album, yeah, from Back to Black, but they were the original cuts before Mark Ronson got his hands on them. And there's a lovely
I see what you mean by cobbled together.
Yeah, do you know what I mean? And then she had it was her original producer from her first album, Frank, who produced this one. So a lot of it sounds more like original Amy, not Amy when she'd gotten into her being a rock and roll star pretty much, do you know?
Okay, I'll give you a blast of this one then from that. This is Amy Winehouse. Our Day Will Come. And are you saying that's a kind of an outtakey or first versiony of something that was already on the first album?
Yeah, that was on the first album. It's just a different type of style.
Okay, well, you do say cobbled together. It sounds like it, all right. Mm-hmm. So you don't think necessarily Great Legacy. Probably could have done without it. Lioness is what it's called. Amy Winehouse, but 5 months after death, goes straight to number one on the charts. Now, Leonard Cohen, the new one, is going to come out. And he died there a couple of years ago. So Thanks for the Dance is what it's called. It's going to be released November 22nd. Tell me about that.
Okay, well, this one is actually, I think, where you get a posthumous album that's done the right way. Now, I've only listened to the first song from it, which is called The Goal. But
yeah, that's all we have, I think.
Yeah, it is. Yeah. But I was hoping to get a little sneaky listen in advance. But basically, his son, Leonard, had created most of these songs. He had gone through the process and he knew he wasn't going to get to finish them before he died. And he gave his son full permission, please go and make another album, because his son had produced his album just before he died. They wanted darker. And pretty much he handed it over and Adam went off for about 9-10 months, got some people, collaborators involved, including Beck and Damien Rice. He got Bryce Dessner from The National involved. He's just, basically what he has said is he has done his father proud in terms of he's used what his dad would use, the little intonations that would be very, very synonymous with Leonard Cohen. He's used it in the songs. So he's hoping that it's going
he's
to
He's done his father proud. That's what he says. We'll be the judge we'll of that.
I do think he's going to be right, like.
Right, okay. We'll take a blast. This is The Goal from the forthcoming posthumous album release from Leonard Cohen. The Goal is what it's called. The album will be coming out on November 22nd and it's called Thanks for the Dance, and that's from Leonard Cohen. And what we're looking at here now is posthumous album releases with Kate Brennan Harding. So Kate, give us another one.
Right, okay. Well, this year we saw the release of Avicii's album, Tim. A full year, and a year and a bit actually after he died. And obviously he died very tragically. So basically, there were 16 tracks that he had ready to go. Or, well, you know, as in he had finalised, these are his 16 tracks. And yeah. He went off, sort of, it had become very reclusive. He went off to finalise these. Most of the work on them had been done. He just hadn't picked who was collaborating and who was going to sing on them. So then he died. Now, when I saw that this was being released, it made me feel a little bit, I don't know, just a little bit uncomfortable, because it's fair enough for big, huge labels to be releasing these things. But at the same time, it's like, is it going to be in line with what he actually wanted? But in doing the research for this bit, I saw interviews with his family and they really, really took hand. They took it in hand, right. The songs, and they kind of finished it off the way they thought that he would want them to be finished off. Plus the album that is raising funds for his charity, which is to prevent suicide. So, you know, it's going to do good. I was a little bit cynical about it, but actually it's quite a good album. It's just incredibly eerie because all the lyrics are him and his desperation and how sad he is and how he just, you know, was overwhelmed with the touring, you know.
He really was a troubled man, wasn't
very
he?
Much so, yeah. I think, yeah. You know, when you're in that business, if you don't give yourself a break, if your brain doesn't allow you to have a break, but like he seems to, I think, did he tour something like 3 years non-stop?
Yeah, I think he's a great example of, you know, touring can kill you. Really,
yeah, you know.
I saw the movie. Here, I'll give it a blast. This is S.O.S. S.O.S. Avicii it is, and we're talking about posthumous album releases, and that was from his posthumous album. So Tim, which is the title of it, released in June. What do you think? Any good?
I actually quite like it. Okay. You know, and it wouldn't be my usual kind of cup of tea, but right. Like it is, it's very somber listening, even though it's an upbeat, you know, dance album. But like one of the things that he did particularly was to marry kind of the pop sound with the EDM sound and kind of create that euphoric feeling without it being too heavy, which he did.
Okay, where are we going next?
We're going to one of my favourites, Nirvana MTV Unplugged.
Okay.
I mean, what more can you say apart from educate people
who've
never heard it before?
When they did the MTV Unplugged, was that meant to be an album, or was it only after he died they released it?
It was only after he died.
And would they have released it as an album?
I don't think so. There was a lot of back and forth. I mean, you know that it was about to not happen. They were all about to pull the plug. The day beforehand, Kurt Cobain was about to pull the plug on it.
Yeah.
I'm sure you know this. But like there was also Dave Grohl and Cobain were not getting on. Cobain wasn't, you know, really feeling it. He was really, really nervous, was mainly what was going on for him. And they were insistent that they were doing lesser known Nirvana tracks and cover art tracks.
Really, really nervous because kind of you're more exposed and can't hide behind the noise as
pretty
usual.
Pretty much, yeah. Right. And like, you know, there's a lot of people around who were there at the recording saying that, you know, it was just this vulnerability that was this big, huge rock behemoth band were going to be completely, you know, exposed with this very, very gentle sound. But Cobain had an idea of how it was going to work. And in fairness, he absolutely made it happen. Although I did read something which I'd never seen before that, you know, his guitar was a Martin guitar, a really, really rare Martin guitar for this recording. And he had to, it actually was plugged in. So the people producing the show were like, no, this is cheating. You can't have that, you know. And he had pedals. So they built a little wooden box that looked like a monitor to cover over his pedals, which is why he gets the sound.
He was cheating.
Yeah,
oh
but it's brilliant. Like he was being rock and roll. He was just like, oh, I'm doing this my own way, do you know? And I think it is the greatest Unplugged album, I think. And it's certainly an amazing posthumous album.
Yeah, that Unplugged thing was a kind of a phase for a while, wasn't it?
It was. I mean, it was a really, really good idea.
MTV, yeah.
Yeah, I loved it. I mean, I was a big Oasis fan and I loved, like, when Oasis did it. Well, obviously Noel did it because Liam had an alleged sore throat. But, like, I absolutely loved that series. And I loved George Michael's Unplugged as well, which came after they were fashionable, you know?
Okay, we'll give you a blast then from the Nirvana album itself, and this is the David Bowie song. That's The Man Who Sold the World, written by David Bowie. That's Nirvana from the MTV Unplugged thingy.
And you can hear the
well,
the guitar.
That certainly that's a bit plugged to
yeah,
me.
Yeah, exactly.
Plugged into his head as hair extensions. Okay, where are we going next?
All right, we're going to Notorious B.I.G.
Right.
Okay, and this album is so freaky because it's called Life After Death.
Yeah.
He was killed, he was gunned down, he was only 24. I actually didn't realise he was only 24. I didn't register that he was only 24 until recently. He was gunned down. 16 days later, the album's released. Months before that, the photography for the album artwork had been done, and it was in a cemetery.
So the album had been completely finished and ready for release.
Completely finished, ready for release. It actually had been pushed back. The release date had been pushed back because P. Diddy or Puffy, whatever he's going at it by at the moment, back then wanted to change. You know, he pushed it, I think, by about 7 or 8 months. But like the photographer who went and did the album artwork, they went to this cemetery, and the album artwork is Biggie leaning against a hearse, and it's like it's so extreme. It's like, wow, this kind of prediction, is this weird art? Is it art following life? Is it life following art? But anyway, this album is one of the biggest hip hop albums of all time, released 16 days, as I said, after his death. The second single, Mo Money Mo Problems, that now was huge, and that was huge when I was a teenager. It was across all the teenage discos, I think across the country, really.
Can I give you a blast of that? More Money, More Problems it is, Notorious B.I.G. And that's from an album released just, what, 2 weeks after his death or something?
Yeah, 16 days.
Really?
Yeah.
Okay, Life After Death being the title as well. I mean,
it's just too mad, do you know? Like, and there's an awful lot of like lyrics and everything are all about, you know, it's who's going to be the first to die. It's, you know, I know there was a big, huge gang thing going on.
Yeah, but the picture on the cover, like if you say he's leaning against a hearse and all that, that's just so big. Like, I mean, with the Beatles one, Abbey Road, when people thought that Paul McCartney was dead, like they had to look for things. And the Volkswagen on the left says IF28. If he had lived, he would have been 28 and bare feet.
But isn't there something about the shadow as well? And there is a lack of shadow.
If you look at the back of John Wesley Harding by Bob Dylan, like there's John Lennon's face in the tree. No, it isn't. All that sort of stuff. But I mean, seriously, like that's pretty obvious. If you stand up by a hearse and the album's called Life After Death.
Yeah. And then in the internal artwork of the album, he's standing in a graveyard, and it's very spooky.
Really?
Yeah.
I saw the movie actually based on it. I thought it was pretty good, actually. Very good, in fact. Okay, now, where else are we going?
Okay, so we have one more.
Yeah.
And I think you like this one. It's The Cranberries in the End.
Right, indeed.
You know, we're talking about, some albums that were released that maybe, you know, didn't warrant it, and then some albums that we're looking forward to. This album, I think, is a very tragic but a very beautiful closing.
And makes total sense.
Yeah, completely.
If there's music there, for instance, you know, and the band, the three guys would have been so correct and proper, they wouldn't have done
that. Absolutely,
it.
Yeah. And I think it's an absolutely fantastic album. I think it's a shame that Dolores isn't around
This is demo vocals as such. Yeah.
So she recorded demo vocals.
And they would have put the music onto it later.
Yes.
Yeah,
exactly. And I think you can hear as well what's lovely is the fact that they are demo vocals. Like, you obviously love it. I just hear a little rawness in it, which I think captures some of their earlier stuff.
Oh yeah, absolutely. It's a lot kind of, if you like, almost simpler, not as hugely produced or whatever.
Yeah.
And you can like it so much for that. And that keeps within the thing of the demo vocals,
if you
like.
It's absolutely beautiful, exactly.
Okay, I'm going to take a track now. I know your standout track for you would probably be In the End, is it?
It is, yeah.
Okay,
what's yours?
I've got the other one here, and it's All Over Now. So
I think
I'll just play that because that was the one people probably know. Listen, there's so many. By the way, David Bowie, some people will give out and they'll be having, David Bowie's released on a Friday and he dies on a Monday.
So the thing is, I kept tossing and turning over whether I was going to put in Black Star, right? Because for me, Black Star is not a posthumous album, but at the same time, did he intend it to be a posthumous album? And if it was,
he kind of did. If you listen to the lyrics, people listened to the lyrics for the whole weekend, people reviewed the album, and nobody really mentioned anything at all. Then 2 days after he died, or a day, people said, look at the lyrics.
I know. It was so in plain sight. It was like, a wonderful, orchestrated thing.
Yeah.
You know, it was brilliant. Yeah. But I didn't feel like it was right putting that in this list.
Indeed. Now, if it had been released on the Thursday and not the Friday, whatever. The Tuesday, I mean, but not the Friday. Anyway, listen, thanks a million, Kate Brennan Harding, for dropping in. I'll give you a bit of this now. In fact, I'll give you all of it. All Over Now from The Cranberries.
Dave Fanning on 2FM. 2FM.